It seems that the terms Gullah and Geechee, they're paired together. They're, to some people, might be used interchangeably. But what is the difference?
There is no difference between Gullah and Geechee, the culture itself. The idea about saying Gullah is from South Carolina and Geechee is from Georgia, we like to think of it now as based on a line between the two states. Although there have been some people who said that Gullah is the language and Geechee is the cultural designation, what we found in our own research and looking at the culture is that there isn't a difference. So we combine the culture, the use of the word, the cultural name, into Gullah and Geechee. No hyphen or any other item or element between the two words, just Gullah space Geechee. And we wanted to make sure that Gullah Geechee itself was not going to be confused with any other agency or there are a lot of groups out there that uses some sort of slash in between. But the official designation that we've created is Gullah space Geechee, and because it designates one culture.
The ancestors of the Gullah Geechee group of people were first brought to the southeast coast as slaves to work on the rice plantations and the cotton plantations on the Sea Islands.
Rice and cotton and also indigo came from the West African coast where the cultural groups, where the ethnic groups were brought from, were enslaved. And so the type of rice and the type of cotton and also indigo were brought in with the techniques and the knowledge of the people from that southern Senegambia to northern Liberia. So all of those ethnic groups, all of that indigenous rice built the rice plantations. What people think of as cotton plantations, those were actually rice plantations along the coast, what is now designated as the Gullah Geechee Cultural Heritage Corridor. So when you see a plantation, think rice first, and that the indigenous rice grain and the know-how came from West Africa.
During the Civil War, Union forces early on in 1861 were able to take control of the area near Beaufort, South Carolina, Port Royal, I believe. And an interesting thing happened, if my history is correct. The plantation owners left, and their land was left under control of the Union forces, and the enslaved population was there, too. An interesting experiment occurred. It was sort of like a rehearsal for Reconstruction, if you will. And these people were allowed a certain autonomy, were they not?
The Port Royal experiment is what you're talking about. And the Port Royal experiment, named for the location that the Union troops did were camped, was the plan for Reconstruction of the South. Yeah, you're quite correct with that. And it was the experiment for how the North, how the Union troops were going to then reconstruct the South. So it took place in Beaufort County, South Carolina. I'm from St. Helena Island, which is there in the middle of Beaufort County. And so my family's legacy stems from that experiment. And I still do own land from the 1800s, since formerly enslaved Africans could own land. And it's quite a thing to, you know, to actually say that I still do own that land in my family, because there are a lot of blacks in the South who have lost so much of their land that they gained from Reconstruction era.
Through that historical event, the Union forces taking over Beaufort County, Port Royal, and the fact that so many of these plantations were on the Sea Islands or on the coastal plain, is that what has sort of contributed, and I may be oversimplifying, in creating this group that has really endured over time? Because you think groups of people, as time goes on, they interact with mainstream populations and your identity becomes diffused. You know, through a diaspora, you become involved with other populations. But to this day, I guess the question I have, and a longabout way of asking it, is what makes this group unique and different today from other groups of people?
The ethnic groups from West Africa were brought over, and everybody became part of the island chain in that area in South Carolina and then in Georgia after, say, 1750, when Georgia started, accepting enslaved Africans. And through that isolation on the islands is what creolized, what created the Gullah Geechee culture. When you have multiple languages from different groups in Africa, something new is going to form. And that new thing that was that formed out of people needing to communicate with each other was a language and also cultural norms. So it started in the 1700s, even a little earlier than that, because of a combination of ethnic groups with their own individual languages needing to communicate. By the mid-1700s, have majority African population within that region. And so that's where you had more of the influence of African creation of a new culture.
Fast forward to modern times. What sparked the idea of creating this cultural heritage corridor? I imagine it took a while. Congress, of course, passed an act in 2006, but the run-up to that, who was involved? How long did it take?
This did take a while in terms of creating a heritage area, and you had a series of people over decades that started recognizing the significance of a group of people on the islands. I mean, we have been researched from the early 1900s, publications and research and books and documentaries. And for some reason, there's a lot of work by researchers, linguists and musicians and such that came in over time and documented who we are. From there, there's just been a constant growing interest from then a group of people, say, in the 90s, trying to figure out how to form a recognition of who we are. But through this collective, you do have where people said, we need to push forward for preservation because we're losing our culture, because we're losing our land. The culture is linked to the land. And so it's started from no specific person, because a committee of people were formed from folks in South Carolina and Georgia, and by 2000 really pushed for what is called a resource study. And that's the first stage in a National Park Service looking at a specific location in preparation for becoming a heritage area.
Preserving the land is key to preserving the culture. The corridor encompasses probably some of the most valuable real estate in the U.S., certainly in the Southeast. You've got people wanting to buy up oceanfront property to build condominiums or hotels, private homes. So how does that work with the work of the commission trying to preserve the historicity of the Gullah Geechee culture?
Yeah, the fun of living on the ocean wasn't that grand of an idea until resort islands started coming to be since the late 60s and into the 70s. And so the idea of living on the ocean is relatively new in terms of a couple of decades or so. So you do have, of course, where people are going to say, oh, come, you know, live here, retire in this community and live on the ocean. And somebody who grew up on an island, you don't live on the ocean. You live inland and you go to the ocean. Because we know that building a house on the water or on a beachfront and such, it's going to sink one of these days, which usually is happening. And you don't build houses on those hammocks because you really are asking for trouble. And so we look and see the developers, it's just getting people into buying into places of fantasy. And that's how all I see is that the temporary nature of what people are willing to pay for. Just because it's considered, oh, so beautiful. But what are you destroying? And every time we look at some new development up and down the coast that's become so popular thing to do, to build a house on a beachfront or a hammock, is we look at not only the estuaries where shrimp and fish spawn, but what's happening to the waterways themselves because of overdevelopment. And we've had a lot of problems due to the overdevelopment of areas, sewage dumps and golf courses, you know, spewing the chemicals into the marsh and such. And over time, there have been people who've asked, you know, what's wrong with the shrimp? What's going on here? And not asking the locals, not asking the culture, the people whose lives are based on the land and the waterway, what is wrong, what is going on, but bringing in people, others, outsiders, scientists and researchers, and saying, oh, you're destroying the waterway by overdevelopment. Of course you are.
When the corridor was created in 2006 by an act of Congress, did that act put any restrictions on oceanfront development within the corridor?
The corridor is about forming partnerships with institutions and government agencies so that we can create a way to combine our interests. And it isn't about the commission coming in to say you have to do a certain thing in a certain way. It is about a shared understanding and how we can, one, preserve the culture and also figure out ways to be respectful of the land. There is a history of the people who created the worth of the land on those islands over the centuries. And they have the knowledge and understanding about how not only the agriculture works, but also how the waterway works. And it's a matter of trying to respect that culture and not about governments and policies creating how we should live, but understanding what information we have to share.
Is there a difference of opinion within the communities on the Sea Islands as to how to proceed? Or is that something you're in the process of trying to find out?
We're trying to educate not only the communities, because becoming a cultural heritage area is still confusing to a lot of people in the communities who would call themselves Gullah Geechee. But the education stems to having communities know that it is all right to be called Gullah Geechee. And that comes from our initial, let me put it this way, is that initial shaming of who we are. We were laughed at. We were considered jokesins by every outsider, black and white alike. And that's how I grew up. There is a shaming in the way we spoke and the myth of who we are. And so it's still a matter of having people in communities up and down the corridor and even beyond the corridor, who we call the Gullah Geechee cultural diaspora, know and understand that being Gullah Geechee is all right. And so it is, we are educating the communities and we are educating those who are a part of the communities, black and white, and any person, any other person, because we do have also a Native American, you know, culture in the corridor as well.
What's your biggest challenge been so far?
The education has been the biggest challenge.
Both within the community and outside the community?
Both within the community and without and outside the community. For example, we just finished putting highway signs up and down the corridor as a gift to every county in the corridor. We gave two highway signs to each county from North Carolina down to Florida. And the last counties now are putting up their signs. Sending these highway signs to some of the local counties took some education first. Because first they're saying, well, we're not one of those people. We don't understand why we're getting this. And so it's a matter of still today educating county leaders that they are not only part of a heritage area, but also what Gullah Geechee culture is about. And they are part of a Gullah Geechee experience.
The commission was created in 2006 to last for 10 years, I believe. So it expires in 2016. What happens after that?
We are asking for reauthorization. We're in the process of putting the materials together which would extend our support from Congress for several more years beyond 2016. And it will help us be able to continue the implementation of the management plan, which is the key element for every heritage area. We have to create a management plan. How are you going to create the organization that is going to sustain the heritage area? We were able to finish this management plan in 2012, and it's available for anybody who wants to download it from our website. That book is very extensive, incredible work that a few of us were a part of creating And it has a historical component in there along with how we want to implement what we consider the three pillars of our management plan. It is education, economic development, and preservation and documentation.
For the descendants of the original inhabitants of the Sea Islands, the Gullah Geechee, is it economically viable for those folks to be able to maintain the traditional ways of making a living, whether it be subsistence farming or fishing?
Until the early 70s, we were self-sustaining, using the land and also the estuaries, fishing and also agriculture from our own land. Different rules and regulations that came in stemmed a lot of that, especially the agriculture. And corporate farmers are the only ones who can really abide by many of the rules and regulations that stop the small farmers. It is possible for economic development and for people to build their own businesses and go back to forming the farms, farming communities, and generate locavore agricultural possibilities. But it's a matter of looking at how different laws came to be within maybe the 80s that curtailed a lot of that. And that's where you had so many of the small farmers let their farms go fallow to growing into forests now because of that. They couldn't afford the upfront monies to create and do what it is we've done for a very long time.
I would think that would also spur some folks to maybe sell it to a developer.
A lot of land has been sold to development because you have people who've left over the last few decades going anywhere else. That'd be due to the limitations of economics, of having jobs. And those jobs, if you had a job, it's usually working on a resort. It was not something that was could sustain for a long period of time. You know, worked on somebody's golf course or something that was service-oriented. Then having businesses and such were, you know, rather small. You had a small shop. I mean, because my own parents had their own business, and I've had that experience of my own, of how it's possible to have your own business. But once the younger generation leave, a lot of people never come back. Maybe in retirement, we have a lot of people who've come back home after retirement, but you have people who separate from the land, and the elders are left to pay the taxes. And when no one in the family shares in paying the taxes, especially if it's heirs property, a developer comes in and you lose the land. It's not just the developer. You have sheriff's sales once a year, and you're given a certain amount of time to pay those taxes. And if the taxes by a certain date, you don't pay the taxes, it goes on sale. And people have been known to come in with cash in briefcases and buy local properties.
As someone who is descended from the people who settled on St. Helena Island, are you optimistic about the future of the culture?
Oh, we are a determined bunch. I am optimistic, not just because we are become a fad, and that it is that because a lot of people are now going, oh, I heard that my family eats rice, and for having gone through culture shame when nobody wants to be Gullah Geechee, and Geechee was a pejorative word, and nobody wanted to be called such a thing, to now having a whole population of folks from all over trying to find their heritage, and that heritage they want to be linked to Gullah Geechee. You see where there is enough, not only curiosity, but interest, where people are trying to do their genealogy to link back to who I am. That itself is going to help sustain the culture and the knowledge and understanding. And to have a congressional bill, I mean, imagine that there is legislation that has been created and signed and makes my culture real. That's phenomenal.
Althea Sumter is the acting chair of the Gullah Geechee Cultural Heritage Corridor. Ms. Sumter, thank you very much.
Thank you.